The American withdrawal from Afghanistan is now underway. President Biden says all U.S. troops will be home by September 11th, the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, which were planned by al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. But how does Biden's doctrine of restraint square with history? We've been having a series of conversations about the war and the decision to end it. And today we're joined by Andrew Bacevich. He's the president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. And he's also a retired Army colonel who served in the Vietnam War. Welcome back to Here and Now.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
You've made a point that the U.S. only possesses a limited capacity for nation building, specifically, especially when U.S. forces operate in culturally unfamiliar terrain. Can you lay this out in the context of Afghanistan? What lessons can the president learn in building what you call the Biden doctrine?
I have to say, this is where my own long-ago experience in Vietnam factors. That, too, was an exercise in nation-building, despite enormous sacrifices by U.S. troops that ended in failure. I think the parallels with Afghanistan are really unmistakable. So the lesson is that certainly military power is necessary, plays a role, contributes to our security, but the notion that we can go out and remake societies in our own image, to put it bluntly, leads to folly. It led to folly in Vietnam. It led to folly in Afghanistan. It led to folly in Iraq. And so we need to rethink our understanding of what military power can do and shouldn't be expected to do.
I want to talk a little bit more about this rethinking of military power. But are you worried that when we pull all of the troops out, that the Taliban will take over Afghanistan again?
The answer has to be yes. I mean, any honest person would have to say yes. But we need to avoid the assumption that just because the United States is not there, wherever there is, that things will go to hell in a handbasket. In the specific context of Afghanistan, there are other neighboring countries that have an interest in trying to ensure that a stable Afghanistan now emerges. I'm talking about Pakistan. I'm talking about Iran, Russia, China. They were not displeased to see the United States of America bogged down in an unsuccessful war in Afghanistan. They were not displeased to find us distracted. They were not displeased to see us wasting hundreds of billions of dollars in a futile endeavor. Now, as the United States leaves the arena, then I'm guessing that the calculus in the capitals in those countries changes. And they then find themselves addressing the question, what serves our interests in Afghanistan that is no longer a place where the United States is engaged in a perpetual war? And I think that new calculus is likely to have leaders in all of those countries recognize that they have an interest in stabilizing Afghanistan, in preventing it from descending into chaos. And therefore, they're likely to act pursuant to that set of interests.
What you're laying out for us, is it really a middle ground, maybe between what we saw with Bush and Obama and then what we saw with Trump? This is somewhere that brings all of these doctrines, as you call them, the best of those together.
I think not. In the George W. Bush era and the Obama era, many, many instances of using force, different approaches between those two administrations, but all, I think, based on sort of an assumption of American exceptionalism. And I think a correct reading of the Afghanistan experience would demolish the kind of overarching thinking that prevailed not only with Bush 2 and Obama, but more broadly, in a sense, with the entire post-Cold War era until Trump. Of course, Trump, denounced the forever wars, promised to end the forever wars, was clueless as to how actually to do that. The Trump era, so-called, demonstrates the danger of having no clear understanding of the role of military power. So I think that what Biden needs to do is to, in my mind, learn from the negative lessons of Bush 2 and Obama, reject the reckless use of military power that characterized those two presidencies, but also recognize the drift of the Trump era also poses its own danger. And therefore, what we need is a Biden doctrine regarding the use of force, one that will be prudent, will be cautious, will certainly maintain military strength and capability, but will avoid the hyperactivism that was part of the post-Cold War era.
That hyperactivism, as we know, though, was activated after 9/11 or because of 9/11. I mean, there is also this fear. Do you think that we may fall back into a cycle of endless wars if there's another terrorist attack against the United States? I mean, what needs to happen to get us to this point of, I guess, consciousness, as you're talking about, where we're stepping into this idea of a Biden doctrine that could come into play if something like that were to happen on U.S. soil again?
Well, and let's be honest, you know, there's no guarantee that some disaster like 9/11 could befall the country again. But I think we're in a far better posture today than we were 20 years ago. Let's not get hung up on the possibility of another 9/11. Let's not ignore it, but let's not get hung up on that possibility, because we face other proximate security challenges that absolutely demand greater attention. And climate change would be, of course, one very good example of that.
Andrew Bacevich is president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. His new book, After the Apocalypse, America's Role in a New World Transformed, is due out in June. Andrew, as always, thank you so much.
Well, thanks very much for having me on.